A few weeks ago, when we were talking about entertainment, we spoke of Lot and the vexation that he felt looking at the ungodly conduct of the wicked. I feel very vexed about the topic that we're going to be talking about this evening, and that is those disciples who continue to prophesy the end of the world. I'm really surprised we haven't gotten more of that in the last few years, but we've been inundated with it. And of course, the sad reality is that they're never right. And it makes us all look bad. It makes us all look like we are not kind of people that we ought to be. And so if you type in your browser, End of the World, I did that this afternoon just to see you, you get an article written by Wikipedia. And it just goes on and on and on and on and on about all of the people since, I think the first one was in like 87 AD, who have predicted that the world was going to come to an end. Hundreds and hundreds. And there's even a disclaimer at the top. We know that there's a lot more of these. Please let us know what they are, because people never seem to get tired about talking about the end of the world. And so as I want to develop this evening, they claim to be Christians. And I guess none of us would be surprised to learn that there's been 100% failure rate, because we're still here. You would think that people would learn that you can't predict that. And that's really what the lesson is going to be about. I think Christians need to have a stable heart. I don't think we need to be worried too much about external events. Things look rather difficult at the moment. Things are looking kind of bad. What I do, and I think I talked about this a few weeks ago, but what I like to do sometimes is think about what those Christians in Rome must have felt as the Goths were coming in and Rome was going to fall, and it just seemed like the world should come to an end because civilization as they knew it was going to be destroyed. And for 1,000 years, that was true. The 1,000 years of what we now call the Dark Ages, when most people had no civilization. They were born, they grew up, and they died in the same place. But God had a plan. And here we are, what, 1,500 years later. God may have another plan in 1,500 years. That's why I'm not too worked up about the second coming of Christ at this point in time, because even if this nation falls, it may not be time. God may have big plans for another civilization, another culture in 2,000 years from now that he's going to allow to come up out of the dust, just like America did out of the dust of Rome. And so we need to be careful. We need to be very careful not to let emotions and the foolish notions of people in this world to influence us, because there's a terrible consequence. It makes disciples look foolish. I think most of us are aware that the Millerites, back in the 1850s, climbed up into trees and waited for the Lord's return, and he didn't come. Oh, we got it wrong. Out of that came the Seventh-day Adventist religion, and they tried on the 7th, in 1874, well, we got it wrong again. Then the Jehovah's Witnesses tried it in 1914, 1941, and 1975. I remember the 1975 one. People were getting a little keyed up, a little bit concerned about it, and I just thought it was the silliest thing. And most of us did. We all remember that statement, millions now living will never die. And yet, multitudes have died, because it's a false prophecy. Back in 1970, Hal Lindsey wrote The Late Great Planet Earth. Had a tremendous impact on, quote, religious people. And yet, what are we now? 50 years ago. And those millions who would never die, they've died. And so, the same thing with Left Behind, the Left Behind series. I won't even read that stuff. I won't watch it. It just vexes me that people, I'm sure it's very interesting. I'm sure they've made it into a wonderful drama. It's probably great fiction. But it's just too close to false teaching and false doctrine and things that make you and I ridiculed. Things that make you and I, oh, you're the people who think that Jesus Christ is coming again. Well, yeah, he is coming. Oh, yeah, they've been saying that for 2,000 years. It's almost a fulfillment of what Peter said. Scoffers will come in the last days, walking according to their own lusts, and say, where's the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. Well, these false prophets have created some of this. Because we have people in every generation predicting the end of the world, believing the end of the world, actually giving a date, and then it doesn't happen. And so the world is just looking on amused. What are these Christians? What are they thinking? Well, they're not Christians. I had an article yesterday about that. There's a lot of people who claim to be disciples of Christ, but they're not disciples of Christ. And these people, they're not true disciples of Christ if that's what it leads to. God has forbidden us to do this. God has warned us strictly. And since most of this comes through the book of Revelation, we need to be careful and we need to take careful warning. John was very clear. There's a lot of things in Revelation. There's just not enough information to draw a conclusion. And it's real easy. If we just add this one little thing, it all makes sense. But every time somebody does that and it all makes sense, the prophecy fails, the folly of the movement is revealed, and the worldly people start mocking. So what God said is, and he used John here, I testify to everyone who hears the words of the prophecy of this book, if anyone adds to these things, God will add to him the plagues that are written in this book. And yet, left behind, the late great planet Earth, and most of the people who predict the end of the world, they draw from Revelation, they draw from Daniel, they draw from Ezekiel, but they're all cut from the same cloth. These passages, they're called apocalyptic. Apocalyptic means that it's veiled. You can't understand it. It was not revealed. It was never intended. If God had wanted Revelation to be easy to understand, he would have written it like he did Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. But there's things in Revelation, and most of us have kind of concluded that it was to protect the Christians, that God didn't want to be more specific about the fall of Rome, which is what I believe, and I think most of you believe, that it's describing, because it would have brought severe persecutions on them. And so God says, I don't want you adding anything to the book of Revelation. I don't want you picking a date. Even if Revelation was talking about the second coming of Christ, it would still be wrong to say 1975, 1991, 2020. You remember the Y2K thing and how that took off? I just was so amused with that. It's just so sad how foolish people are. Why can't people understand shortly? The revelation of Jesus Christ, this is in the very first verse, which God gave him to show his servants things which must shortly take place. Revelation 22, the very last chapter of the book. These words are faithful and true, and the Lord God of the holy prophets sent his angel to show his servants the things which must shortly take place. Well, here we are, almost 2,000 years later, or 1,900 years later. It's about us. It's all about us. And you know, that's the common thread. Whether you're living in 1000 AD or 1500 AD or 1200 AD or 2000, it's all about us. We are the people. Everything in the Bible was written for us. And that's how people look at it. And it's so sad to think that, because it's absolutely not the case. There is nothing in the figurative language of Revelation that was designed by God to describe events in America. And you know what will prove it? Well, in 100 years from now, when everything that people said was going to happen to America and America's gone, everybody will say, well, I guess it wasn't about America. It's sad to read the commentaries. Every commentary, whatever period of history you're looking at, they want to draw from that period. And I think there's a good reason for that. It's because there's a cycle to life. That which has been is that which will be. That which has been done is what will be done. Certainly, many of the things that Revelation was dealing with that nation, is going to be just as applicable today. And that's the timeless nature of Revelation. Because in a secondary sense, just like we do the rest of the New Testament, we all understand that Corinthians wasn't written to us. It was written to the Corinthians. We all understand that there are some things in the book of Corinthians that do not apply directly to us. We read about spiritual gifts and we scratch our head. Well, why did he write that? Well, because the Corinthians had spiritual gifts. But we're smart enough to understand that although that aspect of the book is different, it's still applicable in a lot of levels. And so we have the ability to read the scriptures, making the applications, but not direct correlation. And that's where we always see these people get into trouble. They want to take the Bible literally. It's really funny how it works. They want to take the Bible literally when it shouldn't be taken literally, and they want to treat it figuratively when it should be taken literally. And that's what Peter was talking about when he said that some people twist the scriptures to their own destruction. God said, don't change or add or take from anything in the book of Revelation. Well, I trust him in that. So every time somebody comes along and says, well, I've got the answers now, I shake my head, I look at it, because who knows, maybe they finally did. But 99 times out of 100, it's just a new slant that is applicable to their way of thinking and their culture and their aspects of life that we just have to be so careful. There are things that we should be looking forward to in the future, and there are things that we need to leave alone in the future. And yet, even now, only, 14% have the right answer. 27%, now this was done in 2010, but I doubt if it's changed very much. 27% think Jesus will definitely return in our lifetime. 10% say he definitely won't return in our lifetime. 28 and 20% probably will, probably won't. And 14%, and I'm sure that most of those 14% aren't the don't knowers like you and I. They're just people who don't really know, they don't really care. But we don't know because it could be today, could be tomorrow, could be next week, could be 1,000 years, could be 5,000 years. He's going to come as a thief in the night. And a thief does not broadcast when he's coming. So as Christians, we have a definitive answer. We don't have to get worked up. We don't have to be disappointed if he doesn't come. We don't have to be hyped up and worried that he is coming. We don't need to be moved to and fro and cast about by winds of doctrine. We need to speak the truth in love. Now, here's the truth. Concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. In other words, this was common knowledge even in the first century. Apparently, since Paul was only there for a few weeks, remember, he comes to Thessalonica, he starts preaching there, but very quickly, the Jews come and drive him out. And so he's gone. He wasn't there very long. But he says in verse 2, you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. In other words, even in the earliest days of Christianity, before Revelation was written, before any of those things had occurred, Paul said, Christians know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. Now, we'll have to understand that term, thief in the night, and I think we'll get a pretty clear picture of it when we see what Jesus said about it. But the point is that these people were being influenced by false teachers. Paul says, why? You know perfectly. I shouldn't even have to be writing this. You know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. When they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them. Well, it can't be sudden destruction if God's left keys in the scriptures to try to figure out when it's going to be. They shall not escape, but you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. Now, we're going to deal with this at the end of the lesson because verse 4 is what the false teachers like to use. Yeah, nobody else knows, but we know. But that's not at all what Paul meant. Because he was talking about them in verse 2. You yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. There is nothing in the Old Testament or the New Testament to give us any clue as to when it will be. And that's what Paul is saying here. And so any time that someone comes along, oh, we've got the answer. We don't even have to listen. Like I said, you can be polite. You can listen to them a little bit and just say, you know, that's not what the scriptures are teaching. And when somebody comes along and says, are you one of those Christians who thinks about the end of the world? You say, well, yes and no. Yes, the world's going to come to an end, but no, we have no idea when. But we know perfectly. We don't even have a need. We shouldn't be looking in Revelation. We shouldn't have our minds open that Revelation could give us any information about this. We know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. It will be sudden. It will be without warning. There are no signs. Jesus intends to come as a thief in the night. And that's Peter's point. A lot of times we start in the wrong verse here. But let's start. We don't want to start in verse 10. The day of the Lord will come as a thief. Let's start in verse 8. Beloved, do not forget this one thing. Keep this in front of your mind. A day is with the Lord 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is a day. You know, we get so worked up. I think a lot of us are pretty worked up right now with what we're seeing in the world. The world is changing. And it seems to us, or some, I guess I won't say to us, but it seems to a lot of people, maybe this is the time. Maybe this is when the Lord will end the world. There's nothing left. The world's just crumbling all around us. Well, as I say, that's what happened in Rome. And yet God had other plans. We really don't know. But we do know this. One day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as a day. So if God sees possibilities of more fruit 1,000 years from now, well, to him, that's just like a day. The earth turns for 1,000 years, but it doesn't seem long to the Lord. So then he says in verse 9, the Lord is not slack concerning his promise. Well, what promise? Well, the whole context, I didn't want to start in verse 1, but the whole context is that the world that was once destroyed by water is now going to be destroyed by fire. That's where we start in verse 8. He's just laid, the walkers will come in verse 1, and then what they willfully forget is that this world did not continue the same, that God did destroy it with water. But the same world is now going to be destroyed by fire. Then, but don't forget this one thing, beloved. As far as the Lord is concerned, verse 9, the salvation of a single soul is more important than any other consideration. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some count slackness, but is long-suffering towards. Aren't you glad the Lord didn't come back when Rome fell? Aren't you glad that he was long-suffering and he let all those cataclysms and all those people die? I mean, it's a terrible thing to read about what happened when Rome fell. But God knew that there were more people that could be saved. But verse 10, the day of the Lord will come. Because the Lord is not slack concerning his promise. It's going to come. Don't, you know, and that's the other downside of all these prophecies, is you get to the point where you're thinking, well, if they say it's going to come, then I know it's not going to come. Well, we don't know when it's going to come. And we can't get jaded because we're thinking about the return of the Lord in a positive way, as an exciting thing that could happen maybe today. The day the Lord will come, once again, as Paul said, as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat, and both the earth and the works that are therein will be burned up. No rapture, no 1,000-year reign. It will come suddenly, destruction will come, And all of this nonsense that people have gotten out of the book of Revelation will fall into the dust because it never had any bearing or value anyway. It's false teaching based on false doctrine. Scriptures are clear. Like I said, you can take these passages literally. The Lord is going to come as a thief in the night. So I don't have to worry about all the figurative language of Revelation. They can dig through it. They can sift through it. They can come up with their new ideas. And I just get vexed because they're not supposed to be doing that. God warned them, do not add one thing. Does it say in the book of Revelation the Lord's going to return in 2020? No, it doesn't say that. You have to add that. If you add that, then God will add to you the plagues that are written in this book, even if you were right. Because let's face it, if they keep doing this, one of these days somebody's going to hit it. But the sad reality is, they've done an incredible amount of damage to an ungodly world who, as I said, is just amused. They're scoffing. They just think, what's up with these Christians? Well, it's not the Christians. It's the false teachers. And those who are following the false teachers that are creating all of this. We just have to be smart enough, wise enough, stable enough that this kind of thing isn't going to impact us. Jesus explains the thief in the night in Luke 22. Makes it as clear as he could. He says this, know this, if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Well, duh, that's exactly right. If the thief writes me and says, dear Mr. Hitchin, I'm going to come to your house tomorrow night at midnight and I'm going to shoot you and I'm going to steal all your property. Oh, okay. Well, thanks for the warning. Well, what am I going to do? I'm going to get ready. But that's not what a thief does. Verse 40, therefore, you also be ready. For the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. I don't know how the Lord could make it any clearer. He's clear here. He's clear with Matthew. He's clear with Paul. He's clear with Peter. I'm coming as a thief, in an hour you don't expect. And so all these Christians, or excuse me, disciples, or so-called disciples, who are working overtime, sifting through Daniel, sifting through Revelation, sifting through Ezekiel, we'll find it. We'll find the key. There is no key. I'm coming like a thief in an hour you don't expect. What are you looking for? Whatever you're looking for, you're not going to find it because it's not there. The Revelation was written about things that must shortly come to pass. Daniel and Ezekiel were written about things that were coming with the Messiah and with his kingdom, but not about America. Why would God care about America? That was 2,000 years in the future. Why would he give Christians in America the key to understand that the Lord is coming in 2020? When Jesus said, you don't have any keys. I'm coming at an hour you do not expect. Because I'm like a thief in the night. And that's what a thief in the night does. The thief in the night does not leave an envelope in your mailbox saying, look, I'm going to be coming soon. And here's some keys so you can figure out exactly when I'm coming. He doesn't do that. And Jesus didn't do that. So Paul said, you yourselves know perfectly that the Lord is going to come like a thief in the night. Well, I wonder what he means, thief in the night. Well, here's what he meant. If the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Now, once again, context is important here. So let's look at the full context. Now, let me go back and just show you. This is in verses 39 and 40. Well, let's read verses 35 through 38, the verses before. Let your waist be girded, and your lamps burning, and you yourselves be like men who wait for their master when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, they may be open to him immediately. Blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Assuredly, I say to you, he will gird himself and have them sit down to eat and will come and serve them. If he should come in the second watch or come in the third watch and find them so, blessed are those servants. What's the Lord saying here? He's saying, I expect you to be faithful. This is the same exact context as those five wise and foolish virgins who were waiting for the return of the Lord, but five of them had what they needed and five of them were unprepared, and when he comes, the doors are closed. Same thing here. As a Christian, my waist needs to be girded. We just talked a lot about this. We talked about this in 1 Peter chapter 1, where he says, gird up the loins of your mind. And we noted then that girding is what God expected them to do from the time of the Passover. When you're eating the Passover, your loins are to be girded, your staff is to be in your hand, you need to be ready for action. Well, same thing here. Let your waist be girded, let the loins of your mind be girded, and your lamps burning. In other words, as a Christian, today might be the day he comes. And I'm going to work as hard as I can today, because if he comes, I've got to be ready. I've got to have my loins girded. I've got to have my waist girded. I have to have my lamps burning. He has to be able to see. This man has been active today, but yesterday and the day before and tomorrow, doesn't matter. We're going to be ready. Verse 36, you yourselves be like men who wait for their master. Well, that's exactly what we are. We are waiting for the master. That when he will return and knocks, I'm ready. Come on in. I'm girded. My lamps are lit. I'm working. You can see the fruits of my labor. This year, next year, last year, from the moment we become a Christian until the day we die or the day the Lord returns, every day is the same. I'm ready. That's what Paul meant when he said, it can't overtake you like a thief. Not because we have some special insight, but because we don't have any insight, but we're ready because it could be today. Verse 37, blessed are those servants whom the master, when he comes, will find watching. Well, when's he coming? Well, he's coming like a thief in the night. He's coming when you don't expect. I'm not going to give you any key. If we knew he wasn't coming until 2021, we could eat, drink, and be merry. Because we've got another year before he comes. Assuredly, I say to you, he will gird himself, have them sit down to eat, and will come and serve them. That's a pretty good promise. And Jesus intends to keep it. He intends to change our body, to be conformed to his glorious body. He intends to bring us before his white throne to hear, well done, good and faithful servant. He intends to reveal the new heavens and the new earth to us. I'm really hoping that we'll get to watch this time. We just read about it in Genesis chapter 1. On this day he did this, on this day he did this, on this day he did this. We're going to get a new heavens and a new earth. I don't know exactly how he's going to do it. But wouldn't it be exciting to get to watch God at his work? To create our new heavens and new earth? To create this beautiful city that's going to come down, the new Jerusalem? Verse 38, if he should come in the second or the third watch, what difference would it make to us? We're ready. I was as ready in my 20s as I am today. Now, of course, I'm a different guy. I know a lot more. You say, well, you're a lot more ready. No, I'm as ready as I was in my 20s. I was doing the absolute most that I could do, and so are you. Most of you here. That's what we were doing. We were ready. We were like that individual. You remember the parable where Jesus says he went out in the first hour and he hired people to work in his vineyard? Then he went out in successive times and he kept hiring people and they worked. Well, that's what we've been doing since we were called. We don't need any special insight. We don't need the Lord to send us a letter and say, Alan, look, coming back next year, you better start working harder now. No, that's my mandate. How could I work any harder? How could we be working any harder? Because that's what we're doing here. We're like these people. And so the full context is that since we're always ready, there can't be any surprises. You, brethren, are not in darkness so that that day should overtake you as a thief. Why? Because it doesn't matter when he comes. We're always ready. Those Christians in the first century who read this, they were ready up until the day they died. They went, as the Hebrew writer said, after this comes the judgment. When the Lord returns, they're going to be in the same state they were when they died. You, brethren, are not in darkness. Why? Because we know it's coming as a thief, and we're always ready. We don't need any special invitation. We don't need any special insight. We're not looking for it. It's not there. And the people who are looking for it and finding it, they're always going to be wrong. Because it's not there. It's a figment of their imagination. They had to add. When God said, do not add, or I'm going to put all the plagues in this book on you. That's a fearful thing. I don't want that. You don't want that. I don't think they want it. But they can't seem to understand the plain verse that says, don't do this. They want to focus on the complicated verses and make it plain to everyone. Pride of life. Just the pride of life gone to seed. We don't know when the Lord's coming. It doesn't matter. Like I said, I was prepared yesterday. You were prepared yesterday. You're prepared today. You be prepared tomorrow. Year after year after year. We're always ready. Again, always ready. No surprises. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved when the day of the Lord comes, what manner of persons ought you to be? But wait, Peter, I don't know what day I need to get holy like this. Can't you at least give me a hint so that on that day I can be especially ready? No. You're always supposed to be ready. What kind of person ought you to be day by day by day in holy conduct and godliness? If he comes in the first watch in my 20s, if he comes in the second watch in my 30s, if he comes in the third watch in my 60s, won't make any difference. We're always ready. Verse 12, looking for. Literally, this is looking forward to with anticipation. In other words, I'm focused on it. And hastening, that means I wish he would hurry up and come. These are Christians who are thinking about the second coming of Christ every single day, because that's the day when all the promises come true. That's the day when all the presents get to be opened. That's the day when everything will be revealed. It's an exciting day. But it's not something we want to pinpoint the date. It's something we want to focus on the details and be ready. I don't know if he's coming soon. I don't see a lot of peace and safety right now, and that's what Paul said when everybody's saying peace and safety, but I don't know how to interpret that. I don't know how to translate that. But looking forward to these things, be diligent to be found in him without spot and blame. Isn't that exactly what Jesus said? Coming like a thief. Don't know if it'll be the first watch or the second watch or the third watch, but when I come, you better be found waiting. You better have your loins girded. You better have your lights lit. You better be working. Well, what does he say here? Looking forward to these things, be diligent to be found by him. You know, the Lord has actually done us a favor by telling us, I want you to be diligent. If the Lord had told the people in the first century, look, I'm not coming until 2020. What would that do to them? How would that impact them? It wouldn't have been good. Because they would have thought, well, you know, he's not coming. I'm pretty healthy. I think I'll take a chance. I'll get ready. But that's not how the Lord wants it to be. He wants us, by faith, to understand whether it's today, doesn't matter. I'm ready today. Whether it's tomorrow, doesn't matter. Whether it's in 10 years from now, won't matter. I'll be ready. That's how we live. We, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth. Therefore, looking forward to these things, not a specific date, but the event. We need to be content to live every day with the same joyful expectation. Not because we have any clue or hidden information, but just because if we live like that, one day, whether it's us or some other generation, they're going to be right. One of these days will be the last day. And like Peter said, salvation is obviously nearer than when we first believed. I mean, we're 2,000 years later. And yet, the Lord still sees enough future souls that he's not ready. Now, we may say, well, yeah, but it's sure drying up. Well, it certainly dried up for Rome. But God wasn't looking at Rome. He was looking toward Western civilization. Well, what's he going to look for next? Well, Revelation 22. Don't add to, don't take from. There's no information there. All I know is God knows what he's doing. I'm content to let him run his universe, to run his creation, to decide when he's going to wrap it all up. That's up to him. We're all going to die, even if the Lord doesn't return, on a day we don't expect. And when that day comes, we will be carried by angels to Abraham's bosom to be in paradise. We're not losing anything. Paul says to die is gain. It is very far better to depart. It doesn't matter whether the Lord returns or not. I'm still going to get a reward. Moses and Elijah came to talk to Jesus after being dead for 1,000 years, one for probably 800 years. They seemed to be enjoying themselves. They were in glory. And the Lord let them come to earth to talk to our Savior about his coming death. He was in glory. They were in glory. The cloud that overshadowed them was in glory. Must have been an awesome sight. Matter of fact, Peter was still amazed by it 40 or 50 years later. One of these days, he's coming. But our loins are girded. And we're like servants who are waiting. And when he comes, we're ready. And all the rest of this is just a distraction. It's just a sad, terrible distraction. And that's why it's so vexing. It irritates me to see people doing things that ultimately are going to hinder our ability to preach the gospel to people, because they're going to be scoffing when we talk about the second coming, because they've twisted and perverted it into something that it was never supposed to be, never designed to be, never created to be, never revealed. But these people know. It's very vexing. As we prepare now to sing the song of encouragement, I know I haven't really said anything in this lesson that would prick anybody's conscience. But if your loins are girded, and your lamps are lit, and you're prepared, you better not have a bunch of dirty trash over here that should have been taken out. Dirty, stinky, smelly trash off to the side. The Lord's not going to like that. He wants us to be ready. Can't go to sleep at night with unrepented of sin. Because if he comes, or if we die, we weren't ready. We won't be ready. That's why repentance is such a critical thing. As we prepare now to sing the song of invitation, if there's anyone in the audience who has not yet become a Christian, ready, wanting to get ready for that day, or if you're here as a Christian and you recognize that if the Lord were to come right now, I'm far from ready. There's some things I need to take care of. Let's take care of them. And if we can do so this evening and help you, let's take care of them now while we stand and sing.